Welcome to Tree Dog Tuesday, only on the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got a special one for you this week. I was able to sit down with Chuck, Don, and Colton Dunlap at Chuck's home out in Ohio. There's some great information on this, some great stories, some good messages. It was one of the more, pleasurable ones, I guess, to record. We had a great time. Three good houndsmen sitting down talking with me. Also great guys, great pup trainers. And so it was fun. This is going to be part one of two. I know the audio is a little rough at times, so you're going to have to bear with me a little bit. I'm going to fix it, or I tried to fix it the best I could. But yeah, it's fun. Great episode, great guys. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Some of the best houndsmen on the planet right here, all in one room, and then me. So enjoy. You guys give it a listen and let me know what you think. Let me know what you think on this podcast as well as any of them, josh@joydogfood.com. I like it. I hope you guys do as well. So let's take a quick minute to talk about Joy Dog Food. Now, I'm not going to talk about the quality of the product, how it's going to stack up just as good, if not better, than what you're feeding now. I'm not going to talk about all the things we do for dog sports and working dogs in general. I'm not going to talk about all the winners that are using Joy Dog Food, all the world champions and trucks and all that stuff that have been won on Joy Dog Food. Not even going to bring it up. What I want to talk about is how to get it. You want Joy Dog Food? Go into your locally independent owned store. It could be a hardware store, a feed store, a farm and home. Heck, we've even sold feed out of a barbershop before. If they've got a storefront, we've got a distributor that can probably get them some dog food for you. We like to do business at the same place that you grew up in, that same little feed store that you bought your first pocket knife in and listened to your first hunting stories in. Those are the places that we like doing business. So go into that place, give them your business, give them our info, go to joydogfood.com. Our office number's on there. There's a contact us page. Depending on what region they're in, they will get in touch. They will get that dealer in touch with one of the sales reps who will get them some dog food. So that's who we want to do business with. That's how we want to sell dog food. We want to do it with American small business, with an American product. And we've been doing it since 1945 with no recalls. So go to joydogfood.com, go into that store, and let us help you get fueled by joy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast. And this week, I am lucky enough, I'm out in Ohio. I'm joined by the Dunlap gang. I've got Chuck and I've got Don. And I've got Colton all lined up here, and we're at Chuck's place. Beautiful place you got here, Chuck. I like it back here in the holler. But this is something I've been wanting to get done for a while. I don't get to Ohio very often, and it was something I wanted to do in person. I know Ryan Krausen's really excited that we are sitting down with you guys. He was one of the ones that really been pushing me to get out here and do this with you, and I'm thankful to do it. And I appreciate you guys sitting down with me and doing it in the first place. I know everybody's busy, but let's... let's just introduce ourselves, get started. We'll start with you, Chuck.
I'm the oldest. I'll be 60 my birthday. And I started coon hunting when I was about 11 years old. And we come up here from West Virginia, and we lived in town. So I would start as soon as I got off from school calling people to get see who was going hunting to get a ride until I got my license. And I started out with just training my own dogs, and that's what I've done all my life. And it's probably the reason for that probably is because the type of dog I wanted to hunt, I didn't have the money to buy.
Yeah.
And to have the dog that I wanted, I had to train it.
What's the difference between you and Dawn?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
So when did you first start hunting? Well, how old were you?
11.
You was 11 years old. Dawn was 8. Dawn, was you packing around with
him? He didn't go at 8, but it wasn't too long after that he started going with me.
Did you want your little brother going with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because my big brother didn't want his little brother going with
him. No, I didn't. Now, the couple of the other ones that went, they were not as dedicated.
Yeah.
And they'd shenanigans and stuff like that where I'd get pissed off at them. But
he wanted me to go because I climbed a tree.
Yeah, and he could climb a tree, bud. Like I could climb, but not like him.
What was your first memories hunting with your brother, Don?
Oh, I enjoyed it every time, you know, and that as the years went by in the 80s, me and him, and there ain't no way to prove it, but we probably finished more dogs than night champion and grand night champion than anybody that I know, you know, and it was dogs that we raised.
We also had a training school that we trained dogs for the public. You couldn't do that now the right way because you don't have enough timber and enough hunting territory to accommodate all the dogs that you have to fool with.
What year was that when you guys started?
We was charging the most of anybody. And I cannot. Can you remember the years?
Before or after you won the
after. It was in the 80s.
In
the middle 80s.
Yeah. Don, when did you guys always hunt the same kind of dogs, the same breed of dogs, the same strain of dogs?
Yeah.
I mean, you done it as a team. You guys didn't kind of compete against each other?
We had two strains of dogs, an English strain that I bred and me and him hunted, and he bred some of them too. And we really never promoted a stud dog. We just bred them for ourselves and competed them and done well with them, what we could compete in, you know, what we could afford to compete in. And then when I had a little female that an old man went to Paul Taylor and bred one of my females that I'd raised to Rooster. And when I got one of those pups and trained it up, and when they got to hearing about her, they wanted to buy her, and they bought her, and they loved her. Well, they ended up buying all of our English dogs. So that's when I changed to Buck Creek dogs.
Really? Mm-hmm. And what year was that, do you think?
Help me.
That was in the 90s.
You had Einot when I was born.
Yeah, that was in the 2000s.
That was probably was that your first Buck Creek?
Yes, Einot was my first Buck Creek dog,
Where did the name Buck Creek come from? I assume there's a creek right here close?
Charlie Butler in Indiana started the Buck Creek dogs. He had Buck Creek Drum.
Yep.
I judged Buck Creek Drum at Darbydale, Ohio, and I don't remember what year it was, and he looked fantastic. He won the cast. It was an ACHA World Qualifier. And then later, I drawed him in it was PCA Nationals is what they called it. It was their World Hunt, but they called it the PCA Nationals in 1982, and I put him out. If I remember right, I'm the only one that treated coon. It wasn't a real good hunt.
Yeah.
There was a lot of running going on and stuff, but he didn't look like he did the night I judged him in Ohio, but Kenny Burris was hunting him both times.
I got you.
Out of Indiana.
When you guys were coming up, let's start by in West Virginia. Where'd you guys come in from West Virginia?
In the coal country, in the southern West Virginia.
About 30 miles east of Charleston.
Yeah. Fayette County.
What was it like in West Virginia?
Well, we was young when we moved up here.
We all started school up here.
I got
My dad couldn't get good work down there, so he moved us up here to Ohio.
He got a job at Owens Corning, and we moved up here. And back then, if your dad worked at Owens, Rockwell, or whatever, you wasn't rich, but you didn't go without.
Yeah.
You know, it was some of the best places around here to work.
What about your dad? Did he hunt?
Not coon.
He didn't believe in dogs. He thought they lied. Now, we took him hunting a few times.
But now he didn't care for it.
What? Well, then who got you guys started with the hunt?
Well, me. I just My grandpa had an old black and tan that laid around there, and I'd pretend like I was hunting him in the backyard when I was a little kid, and I just got a fascination with hounds. And my grandma told me that some of her people coon hunted, and I must have inherited it from them, because it was all I was crazy about was a dog, you know, when I was, and it went over to him and went over to Colton.
Was it a deal where your dad just turned you loose out in the woods behind the house, or did you have to go with somebody to get started?
Well, we lived in town, so I'd have to get me a ride every night to go coon hunting.
Yeah. Who would take you?
Oh, several people.
Whoever you could get a hold of?
Yeah, I hunted with Greg Holbrook. I hunted with a guy named Meisenhelder. I couldn't name all the people. Yeah. I had a list that I went through every night until I got my license, and then I was on my own.
Yeah. We spent a bunch of nights out at Holbrook's. You know, coon hunted with him a lot, and we stayed out there a whole bunch. In fact, the first big hunt that I won was with one of his blue dogs, and it was at Jonesboro, Illinois. It was the last Futurity that they had.
No, it wasn't the last one. I hunted in the last one. It was at the Diamondback Ranch that you...
I never even heard the dog bark before, and he said, hey, would you be interested in hunting him? He said, they got a hunt Thursday night, and then the Futurity's Friday and Saturday. He said, you can get down there and see what he sounds like. And Thursday night, I put him in there and ended up winning that cast. And then the weekend, I won the whole Futurity down there with him. It was a dog called Banded Sam. It was
you 18?
No.
I don't think you were 18.
No. But anyhow, from there, it just, everything went pretty good. Then we had the dog called Mr. Smith, and I won two world hunts with him. And then a dog called Mr. Clean, I won the UKC world hunt with him.
Yeah. I say everybody's going to know a lot of those names that you guys are bringing up.
Right.
I mean, you guys have had your hands on some pretty well-known dogs.
Now, Mr. Clean, I knew where he was at and told Doug Jackson about him. And Don, did you go with him?
Me and Doug went over and tried the dog, and he bought the dog. And then he decided he wasn't going to hunt, and he called me. And I told him I was hunting for Benny Phipps at the time, and I told him about the dog. And I said, we need to get him. And he ended up buying him off of Doug. And we done real good with him and won the world hunt in 2010 and sold him to Brian Whitted. He bought him.
At what point did you guys, because we all go through these stages, you know, we grow up, we get coon dogs, we just want to tree coons, and then we want to go to a hunt, and then we just want to attend a hunt, and then we want to... Did you immediately know, Chuck, you're 11 years old with that black and tan out in the yard that you want to win a world
coon? Well, not then.
Yeah.
I was just 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
No, but when I first started coon hunting, I was serious about it, and I knew about hunts. When I first started coon hunting, and I wanted to win, and I wanted to have the right kind of dog to do
it. What kind of dog was that?
Well, they weren't what I have today. They didn't hunt as hard. I started out with the first dog that I ever trained myself was a little red tick female that Bert Noni gave me.
It's
a puppy, a little puppy, and I made her into a pretty good coon dog, but she was another class of Einot or Style or any of the dogs later on in years, but she would for sure tree coon.
Yeah.
And then I had a blue tick dog after that that I trained. It was a kind of a, well, there was an old man around here that, or in Shawnee, Ohio, that had Hustler and Hustler 2.
Yeah.
They were hammer bred dogs, and I raised and trained a pup out of that, and he was a nice dog.
Yeah.
I always had a selling a dog. You know, once I'd get it up going good, if somebody offered me enough money for it, I'd sell it and start over again. That's mainly what I did with dogs.
What did you regret selling any of them?
Oh, all of them.
All of them?
Yeah. Yeah, but like I said, I wasn't real high on the food chain, and it helped me buy stuff, my home.
Right.
This building was built by dog sales. I just used it. I loved doing it, and I knew I could do it again. I knew that it wasn't like oh man, this is the first time. And everybody will say, oh man, you got patience. I don't have any patience. I know what to expect out of one. And if they're, as long as they're doing that, they've got my time.
Yeah.
But I also know when they're not worth the time to put in.
Yeah.
That's mainly knowing what to train is the most important thing.
Right.
People say, I don't like to start a dog. Well, starting a pup is the easiest
thing to do.
Yeah. Finishing them out to what you want is a totally different. You've got to know the difference between what you can change and what you can't change. There's no way to train a dog to run a track fast.
Yeah.
There's no way to train a dog to locate a tree right. Natural born hunting instinct.
That's why it's important to have a bloodline.
You've got to have a strain of dogs if you're going to do it the way we do it. And that's why we stuck with two strains all our life. We had an English strain and we sold them out. And then I started with the first good dog I had, other than an English dog, was a Walker Jip out of Hard Rock Cafe.
Yeah.
Well, he did produce some good dogs, but when I come along and watch these Buck Creek Hammer dogs go, I knew that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
That was my type of dog. Hard hunter, fast track dog.
And when they tree, they'll have a king.
That's a big thing.
That's what Buck Creek dogs, in my mind, when someone mentions Buck Creek dogs, Buck Creek this, and it don't matter if it's Buck Creek, blankety blank, 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 I'm going to immediately think that dog's really accurate.
And they are.
That is a trait that all the Buck Creek dogs I've been around and hunted with and stuff usually are. No matter, and you know just as well as I do, they've all got holes, but accuracy is not going to be one of them.
No. And you take any dog, if you unsnap that dog and he's got one thing on his mind, tree and coons, you're going to win with that dog.
100%.
There's no way that you're not. I mean, you're not going to win every hunt, but you're going to win your share of hunts when you unsnap it and it's got one thing on its mind.
And you add speed to it. You really up your chances.
The biggest thing that the Buck Creek dogs have showed me is that you don't have to give up speed for accuracy.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I really like them. I mean, I was born into them. It's all I've ever been around. But you get out in the world and you hunt with different types of dogs. And everybody, there's kind of like this misconception that you have to sacrifice speed for accuracy, and one thing that the Buck Creek dogs have shown, that's not true.
Yeah.
You can have a coon treed. Nine out of ten times, you know, they're going to have a coon, and they ain't going to be slow about it.
Yeah.
You can ask Colton, when we made this cross with the dog that I'm studding right now, I bred him to be a stud dog. I knew he'd be a coon dog.
Yeah.
But I put so much Buck Creek Hammer in him, top and bottom side, where it needed to be, and that's why he's got 109 pups registered, and they've won almost $100,000. And the biggest part of the good ones are dead.
Yeah.
Judas Boland had one named Ellie that got hung. Bodie Price in Kentucky had one that he trained called Buck. He called him Buck, but Colton called him Playboy, a winner. He's dead. Ray Lynn's dead. There's a lot of good ones that died.
Yeah.
That had won money, and would have went on to win a lot more money, but they're dead.
Yeah, and you can't help all that. A lot of people don't believe me, but what he was telling about that cross with Croson was the truth. He told me that this will be the cross that we'll have a stud dog out of.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, you know, just gives another notch on his belt how much he knows about bloodline and breeding and training dogs. It's kind of hard to wrap your head around. It was for me with being younger.
How do you know that
we're going to have, and he mainly keeps females, and he kept a male out of that. And he's serious about it, and it seemed to work out.
Yeah.
The big thing to me is with the stud thing. I mean, I know Dad likes breeding him and stuff, but we'll always be in a dog, and that's a big thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they'll have one, another one in the bullpen.
And I don't think it takes 3,000 or 4,000 pups on the ground to prove a dog is a stud dog.
No.
If he reproduces his likeness and his likeness is good, he's a stud dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if he goes on past that and produces a high percentage of good quality offspring, he's an excellent stud dog. Yeah.
I know I've had some frozen semen out of some of my males, because we always keep a male. I've always kept males, con duds, dollar, all those. And I'll get them collected, and as they get older, I'll have 5-6 litters out of them. We're not going to stud them out or anything. And if I breed quality females to them that I think will cross good, if I ain't got nothing out of that, there ain't no sense in keeping that.
That's true.
I mean, there ain't no sense in it.
When the first, not the first time I bred him, but two times that I bred him to the absolutely worthlessest bitches that I could find.
Yeah.
Axes out of one cross and sliders out of the other cross.
Yeah, just to see if he would reproduce.
Yeah, see if he was going to do his part.
Because
yeah.
You nailed it. If you don't keep it, I don't know if private's the best, but if you don't keep it kind of close to home, you're kidding yourself to just throw a dog out there and before they prove their worth. And like Dad said, it doesn't take litter after litter after litter to prove.
I don't think it does.
Well, the good thing about this coon hunting is, and I know this, it's becoming a big money thing, but a poor man's got a chance in this sport here.
Bet.
Poor man's got a chance. I'll tell you a little story. One time when I was young, I went to a UKC hunt, and I was just first few hunts I ever went to, and I show up there, and you know how you kind of look around at the competition and all that stuff. Well, here come some guys. Back then, the Sunburst was the best lights.
Yep.
Well, they all had Sunburst, brand new trucks. Well, here comes a guy pulls up in an old Scout, rusted out Scout. And he looked at me like he was straight out of Deliverance, the movie Deliverance. And I thought, my God, I bet he ain't got nothing. We get out there and we line them dogs up and turn loose. And I'm not kidding you one bit. In no time, he says, strike and treat Jimmy right through there. And I thought, well, you're crazier than a bed bug. I cocked my ear and that dog's sitting in there every breath, just like rain dropping. He done that 4 times, skinned us. So after that, My outlook on that kind of stuff changed.
Yeah.
I looked for the roughest son of a buck with the worst vehicle and the worst light, you know. And yesterday I was in a fishing tournament. My nephew's got a boat that's probably $50,000 boat.
Yeah.
Okay, we go out there and he's going down that lake, 80 mile an hour, whatever it's going on. He was scaring me to death, but I didn't let him know that. I never said nothing. Well, we got a guy over here in a boat that's probably maybe 2,000-3,000. He goes out there and he catches 8 pounds or 9 pounds. He wins the whole tournament.
Yeah.
So I've always liked stuff like that. That's why I always like boxing. You know, you can't blame nobody but yourself if you got beat.
Yeah.
You know, it was you. And with the coon hunting and stuff, hey, if you're not willing to go out there and lay in that brush and train a dog, then you shouldn't say nothing, about losing. And you're going to lose no matter what.
No, you can't keep from losing.
But
no,
I've always liked that because a poor man's got a chance, you know. And Engel and Maynard, I'll say this about them. I've been mad enough to tar and feather both of them, but they have done good for this sport.
Yep.
They have.
Absolutely.
My hat's off to both of them.
I tried years and years ago to get where no one goes to a tree by themselves.
Yep.
Oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. If you don't have a dog that'll stay treed, you ain't got nothing anyway.
Right.
And too many things can go wrong.
Right.
When that man goes off through there to by himself to his dog.
Especially with these thermals now.
Yeah. Well, even with a light, you can find a coon. If your dog missed a coon, you're going in there and looking around.
Now, PKC needs to do something about that.
There is no way
that you ought to tempt a man to do something,
for that kind of money. This isn't the days where it's $110 sitting there.
Right.
It's $100,000. Sitting in there.
They need to do something. Yeah. We was in a hunt here a while back, and somebody asked, hey, can I go to my dog? Yeah, and I said, well, why don't you send one of them judges with him?
Four
judges out there. Well, we can't do that. We love to have a question over it. Well, hell, we're in the same woods.
Yeah.
Why don't we get together and find out what the question is, you know, but don't let nobody walk in there to their dog
by
themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, you think of that. Of all the casts I've judged, participated in, been in, I'm guessing 9 out of 10 of the questions in a cast came when the cast was split up. Not necessarily any situation where it was a guy moving a dog or something like that, but a tree call being made or something needed voted on or something, a million different things happened when these casts split up.
Well, yeah. It's always a question.
Well, it's like, yes, Josh, not to interrupt you, but if you send me to my dog in there, okay, and we're hunting for $10,000 or we're hunting for $50, and that dog breaks down and don't say another word, I might put the 2 minutes on it, but I might give that son of a buck two and a half minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that's why a judge needs to be there. Yeah. There's just no other way around it to do
it. Or the whole cast, however you want to put it.
It's not our job to judge our own dog.
Right.
It's not our job.
Hey, there's some people, I promise you, that you could send in to a tree like that, and they'll get what they deserve.
Yep.
And there's some people, I guarantee you, won't. That's why you'll have people in heaven and people in hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
Is a fair. We got Don fired up.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him like this before. He's preaching.
Don has something to say. Yeah. I'm glad we got to be able to get him to say it.
He's preaching.
When we're talking about, because this is going to be the theme of a lot of this, is you guys training these dogs and training them from babies and doing the breedings and raising the puppies and all that stuff. And we touched on this earlier. And Chuck said, you know, the hard part isn't getting the dog started.
No.
You'll notice when I sell a young dog, it's always right before he's at the point you got to put him in a crowd. Because that's when it gets hard.
Yeah.
When you got getting that dog running and treeing a coon by itself consistently isn't that difficult.
No.
Right. You know, that's
if they've got it in them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. But it takes time. You know, they're going to be 8, 9, 10 months old before they start doing it. A year old, some of them. I personally don't like to wait very long on one.
No.
You know?
Well, don't you believe that anything that's born with loads of natural ability shows it early in life?
I agree. Yeah.
If you got to hand make and do all work to get the dog, he wasn't born with a whole lot of natural ability.
And that goes back to having the bloodline to know
and
what you're working with.
If you fool with a strain of dogs, you watch them over the years, you'll start looking. There's one to keep.
Yep.
There's one's going to do it. Because they all don't do it, no matter who's got the stud dog or who's got the mommy.
No.
They all don't reproduce 100%.
My niece was an outstanding basketball player. Played Division I at Mizzou, SEC. Started, I think she may have led them in three-pointers 1 year or something. But anyway, when she was like 5,
you
can look at her and be like,
"Tell her
that kid's a good basketball player."
Tell her about your sister.
Oh, yeah.
He got hit in the face with the first ball I throwed to him, and he didn't want to play no more.
That's why I don't
You threw the first ball to my daughter, she snapped and caught it.
Yeah.
You know, and she had it before she got blood clots. She had a scholarship to play softball.
Yeah.
And as a junior. As a junior.
No, and you could see it early. And
sir.
Speaking of that, did you see that Colton over here was going to be a good hound man earlier, or did that come along late?
No.
It early.
He was a baby, he told me. When I say baby, I'm going to say 4, 5, 6 years old.
Yep.
"Hey, Daddy, I don't like this coon hunting." I said, "Well, you don't have to
Let me tell the story when you get done.
Go ahead.
You
tell
can say
him.
What
you tell
the story is. It's actually a really neat story. So, from a young age, I had all kinds. I was always around coon dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Always people here, big name people. I'll list a few: Doug Jackson, Larry Dotson, Ryan Croson came around, Steve Yant, and all of them. You know, during the daytime, I was out there with them. So you build relationships,
right?
Uncle-like relationships, whatever you want to call them. And he nailed it. Said it. At a young age, I didn't really want to do coon hunting. Part of the reason was is he was so intense with coon hunting. He wasn't mean to me or anything, but he was hardcore when he went hunting, and it was hard for him to turn it off. It was hard for me to keep up. And he never forced me or anything, and I think that's a big reason why I stuck with it. But Doug Jackson came here one time, and I, just from a young kid, you know, Doug would bring us candy and everything. I just loved Doug. He came here, and I'd palled around with him, you know, all day, and I don't know what put it in my mind. I told my dad, I said, "Hey, I want to go hunting with you tonight." And it was a rare thing for me to say that, because I knew what it entailed, especially when somebody was here. And he told me straight up, he said, "Look, you know, they're not here for me to take you out here for an hour or two and then bring you back." We were going up, I think, to Jim Samples that night. He said, "So it's going to be an all-night thing. You're just going to have to hang tough, whatever it is." Well, I went with him, and I really did my best to impress everybody, leading dogs, toting the gun, whatever. And at the end of the night, my dad looked at me and said, buddy, you was a big help tonight. And that just flipped a switch in me. And I was probably 10 years old, maybe.
I don't think you missed the night.
After that, we've spent, and, you know, that's the big thing that coon hunting's done for me. I've won not near as much as other people. I've won my share. We all have. The biggest thing for me is a relationship that is built. No doubt me and him would have had a great relationship.
No matter.
Coon hunting out of the picture. Yeah. But what coon hunting has done with me in making, I mean, we share a bond that, I mean, I can't even put into words. No. And that's a big thing that coon hunting's done for me. That's probably the greatest thing that I pulled from coon hunting. You know,
one thing I've always thought is when the son of a hardcore coon hunter or the daughter of a hardcore coon hunter continues on to the sport late in life, those were the ones that really wanted to make it.
Right. Yeah.
Wanted to, because it's hard. When my kids come with me, it's just like you. It's not, I'm working a young dog or I'm getting a dog ready for a hunt. We're not playing. We're not running around in the weeds and the grass. We're not catching frogs. We're not doing all that stuff. We're working. We're at work, and this is what we do. And so you can see, and I'm the same way. I don't force my kids to go. They can go if they want. But you'll see some of these kids, how many guys like us have children that don't coon hunt?
Most of them.
90% of them, I would say. Right. There's not very many father-son duos, father-daughter duos, or vice versa, or whatever, because the ones that are coming up are usually the ones that hunt with the old pleasure hunter down the road, and he takes the kid and caters to the kid and shows him a good time and everything.
That's the truth.
Yeah. But the ones that come from the hardcore hunters that make it, that continue to do it, are usually hardcore hunters.
I've said this all along. I probably won about 140,000 in PKC and probably a couple hundred thousand in unsanctioned hunts. Mm-hmm. Colton will, when it's all said and done, will outdo us all.
Yeah,
I feel that in my heart, and I think that he will.
And a lot of that is for the opportunity that I've been given.
Do you feel like you got a jump start, Colton?
Absolutely, yeah. Buddy. They, just knowing stories and the facts, they grew up rough. And I've always been in a loving household. I got a mother mm-hmm. that's put me up on a pedestal since I was born. I got a dad. That was a big thing with the coon hunting. His life is coon hunting. And the only thing that he puts above coon hunting is being a father. And it was amazing to me. You know, you don't really, I don't want to say not appreciate it, because I've always appreciated it. But you, now that I'm my age and I'm getting ready to have kids, and I'm in, you know, adult life, the stresses that come with adult life, how quick that he took, that was his income, how quick he took a back seat to make me the best that I could be.
Well, we only had one dog.
Yeah.
And if he's going to learn, he's got to take. Yeah. Right. If I'd have had two, it would have been a lot better.
Yeah. Right.
And what Colton said about opportunity is the truth, because here's the way that is. You know, you see all these MMA fighters and all that stuff. You can believe this. There's people out there on the streets that if they had the chance, could be in the same place McGregor was whatever. Yeah. There's people out there that coon hunt. If they was at that same hunt, they would have won that hunt. They just didn't have the chance. You got to have the opportunity, and that's why when you're poor, you're better off to sell half that dog to somebody that's got a little bit of money and let them pay the daggone entry fees and stuff, because you don't have it. I mean, if I paid the entry fees like that and didn't do no good, that thing right over there would take off and leave me.
And she'd have every right to.
Absolutely.
I hunted for a few people, but I was I was harder to get along with than these other cats.
Yeah.
That was the best thing that I ever did in coon hunting, and I thought it was the worst thing I did was sell. I called him Homer. Slider, he's called Slider now, to Alan Stonecipher.
Yep.
I may not know him if he walked in that door, but me and him, just for me, and that's the biggest thing that he taught me, was be honest.
Yep.
You know, no excuses for a dog, tell the truth when it hurts. And I sold him Slider, and we built just this great bond, and man, he's like family to me. And like I said, I probably wouldn't know him if he walked through that door.
If he spoke,
he would. But he's And he's really gave me the the opportunity to hunt in these events.
Well, that's a lot of credit to the effort that you guys put in too, because Alan Stonecipher ain't calling just anybody.
Right.
You know, he's gonna call somebody with a good dog that's put in the work. Slider didn't just show up at your door one day.
Right.
You put the effort in.
He's born right out there in a kennel out there. I watched him fall out of his mama.
Yeah. No, I like Slider. I drew Slider and Ryan down at the World Hunt one year with Rain, and that's a good dog. I mean, he's businesslike. He goes hard. He has his coons.
Yep.
You know, what else can you ask for in a dog?
That's right.
Right.
But when we get back to the breeding part of it, and Chuck touched on this earlier too, one of the reasons that you guys have such a success of getting them from 6 weeks old to in a cast is because you've got multiple generations where you could kind of do the same thing and you know what you're looking at.
You bet.
So what are you looking for out of that litter? Because, I mean, I walk out here, I see puppies out in your kennel on the way here and all this
stuff. Well, now, when they're real tiny, you can't tell a whole lot about them. I'll start watching them. I've watched them, too. They're free barkers. They'll bark pretty easily over anything, and they're bold and brazen. There's tiny pups. That's one thing you could. I've never raised a shy pup. I've seen tons of shy pups, but I don't understand what you'd have to do to make a pup shy. I've never had one pup on this place that was shy.
Yeah.
And just, I guess I'm around them all the time.
Cool.
I just sold a bitch that I called Scream to Brad Ratton. Well, I expected, and it was a done deal. He sent me the money, I sent him the dog. Well, he calls me up and he says, "This dog won't do nothing for me." Well, I'm getting her back tomorrow. I wouldn't do nobody like that.
Yep.
You know, if a dog was acting like it, am I a little afraid that he might have done something to her? I know Brad, and I don't think he did, but I'll know when she gets home here. But my word is more important to me than money.
Well, that's what keeps people coming back.
And amen.
If you're going to sell dogs,
amen.
And you're going to sell started dogs or finished dogs or whatever kind of dogs it is, you're only going to go as far as your word.
That's exactly right. And you're the only person that can ruin that.
Yeah. You want to sell one dog?
Yeah.
Or do you want to sell 100 dogs?
Yeah,
that's right.
Those are your choices.
Amen, buddy.
How many dogs come out of here without a trial?
About every one of them.
Yeah.
I mean,
that just goes to show you. You know, that's what I always look for.
Yeah.
Like, we just bought we bought Brandy off Barry Kitty. And Jed goes, "You want to go down there and hunt with her?" I said, "No." I said, "Barry told me what she is." I said, "That's what she is." You know, and
amen.
Chuck or Don or Colton had a dog for sale, and I called them about it. "You guys tell me what it is. There ain't no sense coming up here and being miserable for 3 hours and then turn around driving home and all that stuff.
Just go ahead and get the dog.
Yeah, send me the dog." So when you get them out, you get them started, you get them going. When do you start hunting them? When do you start packing them?
I'll pack them. I fool with them during the daytime. Yeah. What's the last few pups we've started? 6 months old, they trick in.
The dog tells you, you know, more about it.
And most of them, out of this dog out here, at 6 months old, if you give them a little opportunity, you don't want to give them too much at 6 months old, but you give them a little opportunity, they'll show you they got business on their mind. What bitch you bought off of me? How old was she when you got her?
4 months old.
Yeah, well, wasn't she treeing a coon in about a month or so?
Yeah.
Just naturals?
Yeah, just naturals. And there you go again. You act like, well, you're a great dog trainer. Well, I'm pretty good at not messing one up, but I can't make one do something.
You got to do is expose them.
Expose them and use common sense. Use common sense.
How do you dictate? Because you guys keep some. You kept crossing. You know, you guys are going to keep some dogs around. You're going to want to be in hunts.
Yeah, that's the
one. But, I mean, how do you dictate which ones you want to sell and which ones you want to keep?
I'll tell you about that. There ain't none. The grit female that we had, my wife loved her. But I've always loved my family more than any dog. So when I had the chance to sell it, it didn't matter how much I loved that dog.
I don't love a dog more than
because instead of laying in there watching them crazy shows on TV, I'd get my boots on and get out in the woods and train one. You know, it's not like it's that hard. But I've always, the grit female, I loved her. She was probably by far not the best dog I ever had, but I liked her the best.
What'd you like about her so much?
Just, she liked me.
Yeah.
you know, she liked me and liked.
And she performed. He's sitting here acting like she wasn't just an average dog. She was a better than average dog.
Yeah, she was a coon treer. She'd tree a lot of coons. And
I seen her in a cast. I don't remember what hunt it was.
It was a pro classic. She looked like a robot.
She beat them so bad they thought they won.
I'm hunting a female out of her for Ledbetter and Cody Thoman right now. It's out of my grit female in rodeo, and I've done pretty good with her. I made her a gold champion in one weekend, and
got well over $10,000.
Yeah, I got some hunts coming up that I'm gonna put her in, and hopefully I can do good with her.
Yeah, how old is she?
You know, I think she's 2.5. Then the young female that I got, I sold half of her to Rodney Green in Texas, and she could win hunts right now, but I'm not gonna put her in no hunts probably till next year. I'll get her money one on her for, but I really like her.
And that's you know, we was talking about young pups, seeing what you look for and stuff. I think the biggest thing that keeps, I don't know if you say keeps people away from it, but kind of puts a bad taste in the mouth of people with training dogs, and it goes back to having a good bloodline, so you're guaranteed to have a good one, is you start out backwards. You start out, the only thing you're guaranteed with when you pick a pup up out of a whelping box is hard work.
Yeah.
You're not guaranteed that dog's going to make, and you can get, you go through the stages, you know, you wake up instincts, and that's what I consider starting a dog. You're just waking up the instincts that they were born with. You can get them right there to where, like you was talking about earlier, getting them into a crowd, and you can see a hole in them that, you know, it's just, there goes 18 months of my life that I buried into this dog. And I, you know, that takes a lot of sap out of it.
Right.
It was a big thing.
You've got to be a man.
You've got to be a man. And you cannot lie to yourself.
No.
You know, you cannot lie to yourself. When you see that hole, when you see that, when that dog starts, I'm not talking about makes you mad a night or two. When that dog starts making that bell ring off in your head, like, hey, this is going to be a problem. It's time to.
And there may be some man that'll love that dog.
Yeah,
but it isn't going to be the one that you want to compete with.
Yeah,
right.
Because once you get past that point where that dog shows you that that's what they are, you're just, like I said, you're just lying to yourself, and you're never going to be sat. You're wasting time.
Yeah.
And time is a big thing whenever you train your own dog. Right. You know, when you're wasting time, you're wasting money. And
well, that's the thing. You got to keep a steady string of them.
Oh yeah.
You know, because we run into that situation where we didn't raise litter for 2 years. And then the next thing you know, shock, scent, rain. Yep. They're all old. Rain dies on.
They're gone. Yep. And then where you at?
Now we're right. With 9-month-old pups, and we don't have nothing to put in the cast. And we're here to hunt in a hunt. That's what we want to do. Yeah. That's what we're here for.
Amen. Right.
And
right.
So you guys have done such a good job of, it's like a dang winning factory in here.
It just staying with the right type of dog and knowing them and being willing to go out there. You know, I got bad knees now, but when I've got a dog here, bad knees or not, I'm going to the woods.
Well, it's a team effort. You know, you guys are all putting forth a lot of effort, all three of you. How do you guys get along all the time?
Me and him used to not all the time get along, but anymore I don't have.
Chuck
Colton will say he's making you mad, ain't he, Dad? Well, no, he ain't.
It's funny to see when they hunt together the buttons that you can tell has been pushed for years.
He tries to push them,
and it can really be entertaining out there. But as far as me and him, buddy, we've never. I mean, you're gonna when you're spending 6-7 nights a week with somebody, you're gonna have things you disagree on. A lot of it was me being, you know, getting some wins under my belt, maybe thinking that I knew a little bit more than Dad, which is a big mistake that a lot of young men make.
All young men.
Yeah.
All
and
young men.
It didn't take me long to figure out, hey, when he says something, listen.
Yeah.
Well, even if it sounds crazy, like him telling me that we was going to have a stud dog whenever he bred, when he says something, listen. He's been around the block, you know, and me and him, I mean, like I said, I can't even put our relationship in words, you know.
Well, there's a lot of certain circumstances where an older brother and a younger brother I compete against my, you know, I want to beat my older brother. You know, I wanted to branch it, which we're 6 years apart, but I wanted to branch out and get different line of dogs, different deal, and go beat. And we love each other. Just
me and
like
him
you
might be hunting against each other, and I try to beat him, and he tries to beat me. Yeah. But at the end, we might split the money.
Yeah.
You know, it, you never know.
But Don never did. I mean, and just like Colton, it's the same way with the father-son.
Yeah.
I bet you one day my son, he's got that same kind of mentality that I got. His dream is to draw me in a cast and beat me, and I think that's going to extend to him wanting a different line of dogs, or he may be out there hunting blue ticks someday. I hope so. Then I ain't got to worry about losing to him.
You're clutching your chest right now.
To touch on that, as far as wanting to branch out, I guess what nipped any of that in the bud was any time that I've attempted to do so. I mean, it didn't work out, and it didn't, and I guess, you know, the good Lord was looking after me and snapped me back into it. And he's never been a hard person to go back to when you make. He's anytime I've made a mistake, he's always made it a learning experience. He's never. I think the biggest reason why me and him get along so good is even when I was a young man. And this may sound weird. He's always showed me respect. You know, he's talked to me. He's never talked to me like I was a little kid. He's laid things out, and sometimes it was hard to hear, hard for me to understand. Yeah. But he's never kept anything from me, laid it out on the line, and never belittled me, never made me feel like I was getting in the way. And I guess that's why I've never really felt like I needed to get off. I feel the most safest being under his, I don't want to say supervision, but under his, you know, guidance.
Well, you only branched off twice in your life, and we welcomed you back with open arms.
When did I branch off?
Yeah, you went after some other dogs, other bloodlines, and tried to shun us.
That's never happened.
Let's tell that story, dog. Why don't you expand on that?
Well, he showed up here with a hillbilly deluxe dog one time, and no, he's always come back to the Buck Creek dogs. That's for sure.
Never really left.
What is? We're going to take a quick break because I know I see Chuck got up, got him a drink. I'm going to do the same thing. We're about 45 minutes into it, but I got a lot more I want to talk to you guys about. So we got to stop for a commercial break here a little bit anyway, so we're going to do that right now, and we'll be back with Chuck and Dawn and Colton quickly.
Fuel your dog with confidence. Fuel them with power. Fuel them with Joy High Performance 2618, made with the highest quality of ingredients, with beef being the first. Our key ingredients, omega-3 and 6 fatty acids, glucosamine and chondroitin, vitamin E and zinc, will have your dog's coat looking healthier than ever, healthier joints, and a stronger immune system. Not only will your dog have more confidence in the field with our high performance, but you can rest assured that you are feeding your dog a top quality food, knowing that all of our products are 100% American made, and our brand has gone over 75 years without any recalls. Fuel your dog with confidence. Fuel them with Joy High Performance 2618. Call 800-245-4125 or visit our website, joydogfood.com, to find a dealer near you.
All right. We are back after that short commercial break, and I'm here, of course, with the Dunlaps. And I want to talk about individual dogs because you guys have had a lot of good dogs come through here. I mean, a bunch of them. And we've all seen, anybody who's hunted for more than 20, 30 years that's got a brain have seen a lot of good dogs, you know. Right. But everybody's got favorites. Everybody's got, I don't care what they say. Sometimes they got to look real hard to peel it back and find them. But everybody's got favorites. So let's start with you, Chuck. What was your top two or three dogs that have come through here?
Loomis was the best that I've ever hunted. Houses Cruz didn't win a whole bunch, but I spent a lot of time in the woods with him coon hunting.
Yeah.
And he was one of my favorites. I really, really liked her. Buck Creek Bandit, Buck Creek Style. Now, I owned Style, I owned I Knot. But Bandit, I hunted, but I didn't own him, and I didn't train him. I trained on him, but I didn't train him. Buck Creek Josie, there's another one I didn't train, but I hunted her and trained on her and had her here at the house.
Spook.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an English bitch called Spook that was outstanding. I had not the crow I got at Croson's, what I call him, but I had a dog called Crow.
Bozo Brett.
Yeah, Bozo Brett dog that I really liked.
How did Croson get his name?
I've named him after Ryan.
Yeah.
He named the first dog Mr. Smith after Ronnie Smith. Yeah. And then
guys just named dogs after your idols?
Yeah, then he was little, and every time I'd say, "Hey, don't do that, buddy," he said, "I not, Daddy, I not."
Well, that's where you come with I.
I not. And I spelled it like an I, E-Y-E, K-N-O-T.
Yeah.
And, name some of the dogs that we've hunted with that we didn't own that really left a good impression on us.
Well, we stick with the ones that we owned. The rusty dog he had, the blue dog, was a coon treeing machine. You see a lot of these blue dogs now that...
He was in a class of his own. He'd just tree any kind of coon.
Yeah.
The part I didn't like about him, I always like a good, impressive tree dog.
He was a ball.
Ball mouth tree dog chew.
Yeah.
He'd stay, and the 2 minutes wouldn't get him, but I like a good tree dog. But that was the only thing I could say against him.
I had a dog called Pawpaw that was a real good dog. And then I had one called Jude that I liked that was a real good dog. We, like I said, in the 80s, we finished a bunch of dogs, made them took them to Grand Night.
Before PKC really got big, all you had to do was hunt ACHA and UKC.
Well, then it was hard to make a dog Grand Night.
Really
hard. I mean, it was not an easy feat to get those.
No.
How many good dogs had all them second places and couldn't make night champion?
Well, didn't that good bitch at Back Alley Sally never did make night champion. Yes, she had like seven or eight. No, you made her night champion, but you had like seven or eight second place wins
on it. What about Johnny B. Good?
He was a...
They like to run on him. He's the daddy to Croson.
Yeah.
He was a dog that would do what he wanted to. He was a go hunting. Anything he run to catch. And
he'd run it all.
When he was a baby, I looked out the window and I said, "Colton, that pup's been hit by a car." I said, "He's just walking around just stiff-legged." And I went out, checked him out, and there wasn't nothing really wrong with him, but he was stiff as a board. Well, I come out on the porch early in the morning. They was all in the bathroom to use the bathroom off the porch, and I hear something coming back over this. Now, this sucker's about that dog. I hear something coming over here, over the hill here, and I mean he's driving. He comes right in, and he ain't big enough to swim a creek yet.
Yeah.
He hits that creek, them deer, I'll see the deer. He's running a whole herd of deer. They go across that creek, and he just sets down trees on that creek bank over there. And I said, "There's where he's sore right there." Yeah. He's been, at night, he's been running deer all over the place.
But he was probably the most accurate dog that I've ever had. When he treed, you'd see a coon. He was a real accurate dog.
See, I hunted with him quite a bit when Wes got him. And I got to see him when he was in the mood to tree coons 1 week.
Yeah.
And it was cold. It was January. It was cold. I was hunting duds. Colin was a one-year-old. So, my gosh, that'd have been 7 years ago. And he was a good one-year-old. I mean, a good one. And I think I'd treed two coons and two dens. And Johnny had treed like seven coon in that time.
Yeah.
And every tree he made had a coon on the outside, which is just unheard of. And
they tree on a den, them Buck Creek dogs shine that tree because you're liable to see that coon.
And he had the biggest knack from what I'd seen that week of hunting him from having coons on the outside.
Yeah.
So you could score. So I was impressed with him. But they said, he was just so trashy.
Right. He'd be winning you a cast, and then he'd decide to run a coyote.
Yeah.
Or a deer or whatever, and he'd get treed off of it, but he'd waste too much time.
Yeah.
doing that. But I really liked him. I mean, I cussed him a lot and all that, but I liked the dog, that's for sure.
Yeah. What about you, Colton? What's your favorite?
Well, when I first started competing, my dad had a female out of Mr. Smith called Buck Creek Rock Ann. She really made a good impression with me, maybe because I won the first cast with her, but she was the most consistent. You know, I think that's a quality that's kind of faded away. That could be a problem with people training them or whatever, consistency. And she would, you seem like you may not, it may, you know, screw you some of the time, but she was going to go as hard and as fast and as deep as she could in tree coon, and she'd do it every time, yeah. No matter if you took her to Alaska, Mexico, whatever, she was going to dig in there. Probably my all-time favorite would have to be Stick It, and see her and Croson are out of the same mother, yeah. And we had her, same deal, we had her as a baby, and that was really the first dog that I made a difference when training, and she, the hard way, my dad was, you know, footing the bill, and we couldn't hunt and all, and the bigger hunts were just starting to come around, and I won, oh my gosh, all kinds of money with her, mm-hmm. And, you know, and the hard way, you know, little dollars at a time, and she was, you know, just like he was saying about Johnny, when she treed, she had a coon.
Yeah, I asked Brian about her. He had one.
What about Stella?
Stella. So Stella was the bitch that I won the Youth World Hunt with in 2012. So we had ran into some money trouble and had to sell Ann, and we were kind of out of a dog. And, you know, we don't usually buy dogs. And we kind of got out of a dog, and I was jonesing to hunt and hunt. I got that consistency of going to hunts with mm-hmm. Ann, and I wanted to go to a hunt. And my dad, so Stella came from Steve Yant, and my dad had hunted with her, seen talent out of her, and she had been kind of tossed around, and Jeff Stollard ended up with his hands on her, and we got her, and Jeff had just got her. He hadn't even put her in the woods yet, and we got her, and she was big as a whiskey keg, and you know, she lost kind of the life out of her eyes, and man, it wasn't
tied up at an Amish's house, and just
it wasn't long, you know, with my dad's hard work and me right there by his side, but mainly my dad doing the brains and the making the difference. That man, she was one of a kind, and she was the type that you know, you hunt now, it seems like, and Dawn kind of touched on it, is a lot of these dogs, their main priority isn't treeing a coon when you cut them loose.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of got to being by themselves, and that can, you know, when your main priority isn't treeing a coon, that can set you back. And Stella just seemed like it didn't matter if 20 dogs wanted to back her right out of the truck. If she was running that track with them and she lost in a close second, which didn't happen very long, she'd pile right on there.
No.
She was really good about scoring a lot of points and treeing coons as she came to them, no matter what was out there. That was one. And, of course, I mean, my one that I just love is Slider.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one that, you know, I really had a big hand in training. He's a hard-going dog. He's the hardest-going dog I've ever hunted. And that's saying a lot because I've been with some hard-going dogs. And he's going to, when you cut him loose, it ain't that feathering around out there. He's digging in there as fast as he can and getting a coon treat and has coons. The Axe female that me and Dad trained, you know, she brought something to the table that the old Buck Creek dogs had that kind of had faded away, striking. And when you're an accurate dog, striking can oh my gosh, you can gut somebody. When you get that two, when you're hunting in a cast where you're recutting and most of the time you're casting back in for 1 1/4, when you get that coon for 200, man, you're...
That's one less coon you have to treat.
Right. Amen. Yeah,
they got a treat too to beat you.
Yep.
Right, right.
Well, Josh, Kelly just got off of work, and I'm going to take her out to eat, but I want to say this here real quick. During this, all the years that I've coon hunted, I've met a bunch of nice people, and I want to say this about Kenny Mason. Kenny Mason has done stuff for me that I'll take to the grave. Mm-hmm. There was a place that come for sale beside me, and I didn't have the money to get it, and I just mentioned it to him,
he bought that place for me, and, yep. and I'm still paying him on it, and it's took a long time. I was doing good for a while far as getting him paid, because we'd go to the hunts, and every time I'd win, I'd shoot him the money. I took his slim dog. I won 20-some thousand with him on a weekend. But anyhow, he's done a bunch of stuff for me, that, and I want to publicly thank him for that, and I'll never forget it.
Kenny's as good a guy as in the sport as there is.
Well, you know, I've told people that, and I've heard them say this. Well, yeah, he's got money. Well, there's a lot of people that's got money that wouldn't piss on you if he's on fire.
Amen.
Yeah. And I just, he knows
how Kenny's much. Kenny's a good friend.
Yeah, he knows how much it's meant to me, and I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take her to get her something to eat, or she'll be madder than a wet hen. So.
You bet.
I'll see you guys. And it was good seeing you, Josh. And Chuck.
See you. Thanks for joining us, Don.
Yeah, I love you, buddy.
All right. One other. What else was I going to? I had another question for you guys. Gosh dang, I can't even think of what it was now. I really want to sit down here. We're going to do this again, too. But just the wealth of training knowledge and breeding knowledge in one's place is not that common. There's lots of good breeders that don't compete at a high level. There's lots of good trainers that don't have a line of dogs that they've ran for all these years. You know,
they'll get a dog and train it.
Right, right. And those, and
nothing
that's
nothing wrong with that.
No,
it takes all kinds.
And that's hard to do.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That is hard to do. But they, to have it all wrapped up in one here at the Dunlap Ranch, is not very common. And so what was it, the joy of training the pups that made you go that route?
Pride. You know, not bad pride, but it's if you raise a good child, you're proud of it.
Yeah.
If you raise a good dog, you're proud of it.
I was talking about wasting time and what maybe puts bad taste in people's mouth about it. When you get that one, and if you stick with it and you get that one, and it may be your first one, it may be your fifth one. If you get that one and you take it all the way from when you pick it up out of the whelping box to when you're getting your picture taken, you're getting that check that you forget about. Yeah. You forget about all the failures. I mean, it all comes together. I feel like, and you know, this is coming from somebody that was born into it, but I feel like I had just enough chance of not getting the love for the dog. I feel like it's something, you know it. Anybody that you ask knows it. It's something in you that clicks, that you want that bond with a dog.
People don't understand how hard it is to get that bond with that dog.
Amen,
too.
Buddy. They ain't machines.
No, machines, if they break apart, you order that other part to fix it. A dog is made out of the same thing we are. And you've got to have a bond with that dog. Yeah.
But it takes a special dog to bond with you, too.
Amen, buddy.
You know, I don't just because I got one that jumps on my lap and licks my face every
right,
now and then.
Buddy. You nailed it.
We ain't friends.
No, you nailed it.
But until you see that dog, because there's dogs with natural ability. I know this is kind of hard to put into words, but there's dogs with natural ability that they go out there and they do it. But at some point in their career, you see that they're doing something because they know that you want them to.
That's right.
That's when the bond kicks in.
That, you bet, buddy.
You bet.
You bet.
I believe that.
Yeah. You bet.
And
that's a good way to put it.
Years and years ago about what makes up a good dog. It's the same thing that makes up a good person. Brains, natural ability, and heart.
Heart.
There's the three things that you can't, there's nothing I can do to train that into any animal. They've got to be born with a good they can be overloaded in one department or the other and still make out.
Yeah.
But the best thing that you can get is that one that has a ton of heart, a ton of brains, and a ton of natural ability.
That sounds easy, don't it, Chuck?
Yeah, it's not, though, because look how many average human beings there are, you know, and versus outstanding human beings.
And it's a cliche, but you hear people say it all the time, and nothing makes me more mad than seeing a dog with a bottomless well of natural talent.
And no heart. That's just...
Yeah, I'll take one.
We've all had one.
They are so sorry that they don't have enough guts to tap in and dig deep. Yeah. I'll take one that'll you can hit with a pickup truck that maybe lacks in the natural ability department over one that's overloaded that could tree any kind of coon that it counts, but it ain't gonna turn over grass or anything to do it. And you know it's that's something that's been said for a while in all kinds of sports.
Yeah,
you know, talent is a great thing to have, but when you got it, just like a man, when you got a man that'll dig deep and whenever, you know, take them lumps in the face and mm-hmm. still come back swinging, buddy, you got something that can't be stopped, you know.
Yeah. And mixing that heart in with the talent and the brain. Talent and brains you can get fairly regular.
Amen.
I feel. There's so many good breeders right now, and they've got talented dogs. You've seen them one dump wonders.
Yeah.
Out of the pickup, man, drive a track, hey, have all the bells and whistles, get there.
You got
and then as the night goes on, they just fade. The heart. They just fade.
That's right.
I never hunted with Diamond Jim, but they said that was back in, I hunted in 3-hour hunts.
Yeah.
But I didn't hunt with Diamond Jim. They said in the first hour, you could be beating him. But as that hunt went on and on and on, you wasn't going to beat him.
Yeah.
He just kept.
Yeah, when you're talking about heart, like you said, you nailed it. The best I've heard it said, you can get brains and natural ability regular with a good bloodline.
Yep.
That's where your breeding standards come. But your heart comes to the individual dog, and just like with people.
Well, and it's bred.
It's bred, but you get that special dog, and that's one of the big things. You get that special dog whenever you put it through the ringer, and it still comes back more, and it all ties together. That comes back to that bond. Whenever you're the person that they look to, and you see that they're doing it for you, and they got a big enough heart between in their chest to dig, buddy, you've got something that can't be stopped.
They're so rare. But
you guys
manage to get one about once a week.
Not a week.
I wish it was that easy.
To.
Oh gosh.
What
it might heal my knees.
What you guys got in store? I know you got something in the wings. You got these young dogs out here. What else you got coming up? I know you're still hunting Slider.
I got a litter mate to Dawn's that he's kind of in the stage of starting to mix him up in a crowd. I think he's going to make he's going to be a different style dog than what I'm used to. He's kind of a pocket dog. He's not a sorry hunting dog, but he can tree a lot different style of coon. And the Buck Creek dogs we were talking about, all dogs got holes. I'd say their biggest hole is being able to tree a coon that's been laid up a tree. And I think that's a rare thing to find nowadays anyway.
I don't think you see as many good layup dogs.
You see a lot of layup dogs, but they ain't accurate enough.
Not to be
at the level that we're hunting these dogs.
Right, and I think that dog has that in the – has that in his toolbox, and it's something that I've never encountered with training. And I've kind of, you know, my training technique has always been, if a dog gets on a track that I feel like that they're going to beat and it's not going to be nothing coming. The Buck Creek dogs usually have a lot of natural ability that if they get on a track that ain't going to be zip, zang, bam, boom, they're going on to the next one. With this pup, it's always been push them out of there. Keep pushing them. Keep going, you know, because time's money. With this dog, I've kind of took a different approach and let him work out because I've seen it bear fruit so many times that it's
And
here I am 600 yards from the truck and I've treed 3 coons.
Yeah.
And 600 yards might be your first tree, you know, sometimes with them. I am so excited, and I talked about Alan earlier, where I'm at in coon hunting right now. I've got a great job. I mean, we give ourselves a lot of credit in this dog training thing, but there's a man upstairs that watches over us and puts things in our lives.
He is just
all the mistakes I've made and all the failures I've had, he's strung them all together. I've got Alan, who I just can't, you know, I inherited one thing from my dad. I'm probably a little bit hard to get along with, and probably because we're brutally honest.
Yeah.
And
if I tell somebody something, I expect them. I keep my word on it, anything I say. I'll keep my word,
and
I expect other people.
And that's
to do
what
it
I
too.
That's what I love about Alan. Alan's a coon hunter. Whenever I tell him what went down, he knows that when you go out to these hunts, You're not gonna win every time. Right. He understands the breaks. He's a coon hunter. When I tell him about a pleasure hunt, tell him what I'm going through with training this pup, I'm not speaking no foreign language to him. It's just, and he is not afraid to let me compete. And it's just like the ultimate. I'm just giddy with what the years are going to bring with me and him. I mean, I feel like I've made a lifetime relationship with him.
Well, that brings up another subject, and I was going to ask you guys about it. And, of course, Chuck, you've been doing this a long time. And look how much this sport's changed over the years.
Yes.
And the style of dog has changed. The style of the hunt has changed. It's a business now, not just a sport. You know, and it was always a business to a point. You know, everybody was selling puppies. There have been professional coon hunters for as long as there have been coon hunts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's at a level right now that it's never been.
No.
And that is great for guys like you that like to start your own pups. You know, these guys like Alan Stonecipher that's given Colton, you know, his chance to do this. Wade Grashwitz is sending me out here on Joy's dime to get this stuff recorded and to do that stuff. And then, you know, I'm hunting dogs for people every night, and I'm doing this during the day, and I'm living the dream, too. I'm not like Colton. I'm giddy, too.
Having fun.
And so all the hard work has paid off, but the sport has changed a bunch, and we've got to build different dogs. It seems like every two or three generations, these dogs got to change a little bit. And they got to be tweaked just a little bit. And that starts all in the breeding pen a little bit. You know, they're a little more independent now than they were. The clock is different.
Yeah.
You know, the style is different. I think when you come in the early 2000s, most of the dogs competing weren't nearly as accurate as they are right now.
They're a lot of, I think they are.
Were accurate. They were that accurate back in the 70s and
80s,
too.
Oh, yeah, you know? I can remember hunting with dogs that they just didn't miss.
Right.
They did not miss. And it's going to sound like I'm putting on a show for these dogs, and I'm not. They are like that. Yeah. When they tree, you're going to look at a coon.
Yeah.
You don't go in there looking for a place where that coon escaped or, hey, has this got enough leaves on it? I look for that coon because I know there's a coon in
it. I can remember, you know, and I've born with a silver spoon in my mouth as far as being around accurate dogs. I can remember kind of getting out into the world and competing, and I kind of was getting out there right when times was changing, because I do agree with you, the dogs are a lot more accurate and independent now. The sport, I'm only 24 and only been hunting for 11, 12 years, and I've watched it change. And I can remember getting out and going to trees that you didn't see coon was like, and I'm not trying to brag, was just something that like blew my mind. You know, I can remember dogs getting treed at the end of the cast that may have an opportunity to beat me and thinking that I'm beat, and go in there and the dog doesn't have a coon. And it was like, you know, that's the one thing that I've loved about these dogs. If you can get them in here and you can get them treed, all you got to do is find the coon. You know, you may have to take a bad break and not get to find it, especially this time of year, but it's a done deal, you know. And that was one thing that really made me have a lot of appreciation and be loyal and faithful to these dogs is the accuracy, you know.
As far as the change, you're going to see 16 dog hunts take over.
Yeah.
You can manage a hunt that small so good.
Yep.
So good. There's no excuse for a club to hold a hunt that has 16 dogs in it that them men don't get good territory to hunt in, good safe territory to hunt in, and have a good judge if they are putting judges out there, because four judges ain't that hard to find.
And you shouldn't have to drive 2 hours to the woods either.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And when you know how many's coming to the party, you can make preparations and everything like that.
And I don't see any, I don't have any problem with it. I don't have any problem with it. They're having enough of them that if you can't go to every one of them, you're going to get to go to some of them. And they pay good money.
I'll tell you, we're talking about change a little bit. If you were to ask me kind of before this social media podcast thing came around back then, but in that time, I would say that coon hunting didn't have a very long life.
Yep.
The one good thing that's come out of these – I've been for the podcast with my fist up in the air from the – is the education.
I've enjoyed that. enjoyed every one of them I've listened to.
We, because coon hunters in the coon hunter world, that's your main audience. We enjoy it. You're hearing stories that you may have never heard before, and learning about a coon hunter more than just what he did with dogs in his personal life.
Yeah.
But the education that it gives Johnny Public, man, I have people out there. I'll have guys at work that's never been in the that they know that I'm doing this. They'll be listening to it, and the education that comes from it. And that's a big thing that I like about when I listen to yours. It's not all about the interview and talking to people. It's the education about what we do.
What you go through.
What you go through. How we're not out. We're not a bunch of... We're rednecks. He'll admit it. We're rednecks. But we're not out there just with no regard of people's property and stuff. And I really think that the... When people jumped on this and doing the podcast, and the people that put the miles in like you and go around there and give this some
exposure. They're helping the sport.
The sport, it, to me, has gained 10, 20 years.
Yep.
Territory's always going to be a battle. You know, we're...
But, you know, this helps with that, too.
You bet it does.
Amen, buddy. Yeah. Amen, it does. You absolutely.
Know, we've been preaching, you know, because we're all going to... We're all in the same boat. They're deer hunters, turkey hunters, and everything, you know. It's... You come out of Columbus coming this way, and you can see the new houses getting built, and you can see all that stuff, and you can see the urban sprawl, and, you know, we got to band together a little bit, or none of us are going to be doing it.
That's right. That's true. That's right. And I'll tell you, when you get that person that, and I feel like that this is gonna change too. When you get that person that has no idea, you putting yourself in a different set of shoes, you take a person that's not really, maybe they are, maybe they go deer hunting a little bit, but they're not really an outdoorsman. It's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. You get up to get a drink of water. You see a light going across there. You have no idea. You cannot blame a person for being, you know, thinking the worst thing, the worst thing being the first thing that pops their mind. With these getting the publicity that they are, they just run across it and hear it. You know, if you do that time and time again, it ain't going to be too long that that person looks out their window and be like, hey, that's coon hunters. What I heard about on Joy Dog.
Yeah, they're not mining coal.
Yeah, they're not
mining coal.
They're not stealing. I'd like to say something about the rules.
Yeah.
I have hunted just as many quiet dogs as I've had, probably more than having a strike dog. But if every organization would rate, and UKC, I don't like their rule where in 2 minutes you can still get 75 on a tree.
Yeah.
But if you take a 3 minute tree and you drop it down 30 seconds and 30 seconds, raise that first tree to 125, let them strike wherever they want to strike.
Yeah.
Let them strike wherever. If I've got a coon dog and I'm getting an extra quarter on that tree, I'm going to win a lot more than I'm going to lose.
Yep.
And I believe that it should be first plus trees is the first tiebreaker, then plus 3 points. A dog that trees 2 coons and has first tree on them is a lot better than a dog that took a 75, maybe 375s or whatever, you know, totaling these plus points up like that. Count them first plus trees first. Right. And raise that tree to 125 and strike on her before the third bark. Forget about worrying about it. You know, I'm not going to sit out there and cry. When I was hunting a totally still dog, which I have hunted them, I never cried because somebody got a first strike. That dog, I expected it to tree 2 or 3 coons. And win that way.
Well, I figure, because you know the dogs I've hunted, there have been a lot of stone silent quarter strike dogs. Rain struck for a quarter just about every time you turned her loose. Scent was going to be the same way. Con definitely never got struck. All they had to do is tree one more coon than every dog I've turned them loose with.
That's right.
And if they can't do that, did I really deserve to win that cast in the first place?
You didn't.
Yeah. Now I've got a dog that's going to get barked. She's going to get her mouth open. She's going to be struck for 100. She's going to bang around too much, but she's going to make 2 trees, and if they have coons in them, she's going to be hard to beat. I'm not going to whine if I get an extra coon treat on me, and I'm not going to whine if I win because I treat 2 coons and so did some silent dog. You know,
that's right.
You just dance with the girl that brought you.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Here's the big thing.
About striking. Now, we know when a dog leaves you barking right off the chain, he's not on a track.
Yeah.
But when a dog gets out there a little bit and opens up, naturally, before the minute's up, most of the time, they're going to be barking. How do we know what they're barking on?
You don't.
You don't know. You're making an assumption. Hey, a good strike dog, if coon scent goes across his nose, he's going to bark. Mm-hmm. Now, he may not be able to find that coon real quick. He may have to go looking for it. But put that tree up where it belongs and let them strike wherever they strike. Yeah.
And you were kind of touching on, I think a big thing is, too, is we hit. There's a few things that I want to talk about. The big thing is you can't think that a rule change, naturally rules, you have to change. You have to make changes with the times and stuff. But you can't think that a rule change is gonna change your you know, what you do in the winner's circle. You can't. If you start out with thinking that you have to shape shift the rules to what type of dog you have, you're going backwards. You nailed it. You got a tree coons.
Yeah.
That's how you win, is tree and coons.
A dog style changes.
Yeah, that's right.
You may have a barker 1 week, and you may have a quarter strike dog, and you may have this or that.
Your
dogs don't last forever.
Right. You're putting yourself at a disadvantage if you're going out there thinking that rules are going to be what saves you, or that whining about this and that. Take me where you want to take me, put me under the rules, and as long as we're hunting with a set of rules that the dog that trees the most coons wins, I'm going to do my share of winning. Yeah. And if I get beat, I get beat. You know, you can't always have something to blame whenever you lose. If you do that, then you'll never get any better.
Well, I mean, Yant said it. I believe Yant said it. But he said, change the rules and the same guys are going to be in the winner.
That's right, buddy. Yeah. That's right.
I guarantee you Buck Creek dogs are going to win no matter what you do. Colton Dunlap and Chuck and Don are going to get winners no matter what the rules are. Because really, it's just about tree and coons.
Right. And that's a big problem with our society and in everything you look is
whining and crying.
Yeah. Go out there, do the hard work. And you may not win every one of them, but it'll show. Your hard work will show.
Yeah.
Getting back on rules, I'll tell you an organization that had it all going on that I was all for, that I thought really, I was really sad when they kind of dove off.
Talking about
CHKC, yeah. Man, they had something going, man.
They just let the inmates run the asylum.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
To me, a competition. And maybe this is the dog trainer in me, the competition is going out there and, you know, whoever trees the most coons, but it's also testing what you've done to train that dog. And that getting minus for going back to a tree, buddy, that is something right there that I really think is a good deal, because a dog...
If you show up to a tree that you ain't supposed to be at, no matter what's up that tree, minus.
Yeah, I agree.
All the... You know, to me, if a dog goes in, every dog, I mean, I've seen it happen, you're going to have rarities, and that's just one of them things where you can't whine and cry about it, but if you have a dog that's been trained and has been prepared for that competition, they ought not be going back to a tree.
No.
No.
And if they shouldn't leave trees.
They shouldn't leave trees.
They shouldn't cover after the trees up on late. I mean, there's a lot of things they shouldn't do. They're going to do it.
Right.
You know, they're going to do that to the best trainers in the world every now and then. That dog's going to do something that just blows your mind.
Stupid. Yes. Yeah, that you didn't train them to do that, but they just did it anyway. Yep.
Exactly.
But when they do it, they ought to get punished for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree.
In training and in competition. They should be punished for it both ways.
Right.
Yep. You do it in training, you don't have to worry about it in competition.
Most of the time. That's what I was trying to get at. Yep. Amen.
Most of the time. But no, you guys got anything else to add?
I don't believe. I think we've covered her all.
I've really enjoyed it, man.
I have too.
We've touched on a lot of good stuff.
I do too.
We did a podcast with, what was his name?
Clayton Stark.
Clayton Stark. And I feel a lot more comfortable with you. Not because that was my first one, you know. But I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I've been wanting to come out here and get you guys on the podcast for a long time. You know, we can do them over the phone, but that ain't the same.
Yeah.
You know, I like looking at a man whenever I'm talking to him, and the conversation's always better. And I'm just thankful that you guys allowed me to come out.
Oh, buddy,
I enjoyed it.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
No, we're going to do it. I'm going to bring a dog next time.
Okay. Okay.
Absolutely. Anytime.
But all right, I appreciate it. That is Colton and Chuck, and we got a little bit of Don before he had to take the, take his wife to supper, which is always a priority over a podcast.
He got drug out by his ear.
That's right. But we thank you guys for listening. We thank our guests for allowing me to come do it. And this is the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast, and we thank you for listening.